Washington Court of Appeals, Division 1, is now in session. The Honorable John Chun presiding.
Good morning, and please be seated.
Good morning. Kate Van Ord here for Mr. Shellabarger. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes, please.
First case is State versus Shellabarger. You'd like to reserve 3 minutes?
Thank you. Thank you. After police decided that they would not arrest Mr. Shellabarger for DUI, they continued to detain him without reasonable suspicion. During that time, they extracted his permission to look inside the vehicle while he was confronted with three officers on the side of a road, and a fourth officer was circling the car with his truck with a canine. And he was told whether he consented or not, they would search his truck. This exceeded the Terry detention. He was not lacking the reasonable suspicion, and his consent was involuntary. Reversal is required on either ground. I'd like to first talk about reasonable suspicion, because that is determinative in this case. If he was detained longer or, you know, pursuant to an invalid where the state lacked reasonable suspicion, any consent that came after would automatically be involuntary. So the state doesn't really talk about reasonable suspicion in their brief. They talk about a DUI. That gave the officer reasonable suspicion, but that was resolved at the time of the detention. So we know that that cannot be a basis for.
What do we do with the fact that the call for the dog preceded the breathalyzer administration?
So the breathalyzer administration was it resulted in the continued decision not to pursue the DUI. Rodriguez talks about it is the expansion of the detention. So whether the call came or not, it's the fact that he was detained beyond the without reasonable suspicion. So the call might have come minutes before, but he was in fact detained for that beyond the scope of the stop when the dogs came after.
What I had in mind is it appeared his testimony was he had determined that he was not going to cite him for DUI, then made the call for the drug dog, and then proceeded to do a breathalyzer.
Right. And the significance of that?
What do we do with that? If his testimony is to be taken at face value,
right,
there was no basis for the stop, to continue to detain him.
Right. Well, that would be further a legal basis to detain him beyond the stop. So,
he says he's not going to cite him with a DUI.
Right.
But then after that, he decides to give him the breathalyzer.
Right.
What do we make of those facts? Are you saying that he's still thinking that maybe there's a DUI?
I mean, most likely he's just finding something to detain him longer. So we already know he's not.
Because the canine's on the way.
Right. I mean, that would be the reasonable interpretation. So, yeah, I mean, he already said there's no DUI here. And, yes, so at that point.
Was that argument made below? I mean, why do we not have any factual finding on that? What his motivation was in doing what he did?
The factual findings here were not, you know, particularly detailed, I would say. In fact, they don't really state what the reasonable suspicion would have even been, what it was even for. So I don't think we really have that. We certainly know, though, that the record does reflect there was no DUI. The DUI was over. And so with that, yes.
You mean the DUI investigation?
That's right. Yeah, the DUI investigation was over. And so at that point, and even if we allowed that was reasonable, which it's not, even if we allowed that, okay, a last check might be okay, what happened after the breathalyzer certainly far exceeded, because that absolved any concerns the officer might have had. So even if, I think that we should absolutely say once a DUI investigation's over, we don't, you know, detain somebody for a further breathalyzer, but even if it could be found, we go far beyond that in this case.
Right, but he was still dealing with the traffic infraction when he asked for the breathalyzer. So he still arguably, didn't he have reasonable ability to keep the person there until he finished the traffic infraction?
The traffic infraction was in terms of the issuance of the ticket, and the court's findings reflect that this in 1.10, the court says the ticket was issued.
Yeah.
So they're just discussing. So at that point, that traffic stop is over. The breathalyzer is over. By the time the canine gets there, they're just chatting about, you know, the ticket that had been issued. And so it is fully over by the time the canine arrives, both the breathalyzer and the traffic stop.
So you're saying that the demarcation, the Rodriguez point in time where we say, was this unreasonably prolonged, is the issuance of the ticket, not the discussion that about the ticket that occurred thereafter.
Right. That marks the end of that traffic stop because the ticket was issued. And sure, they might chit-chat for a little bit after, but it is clear the traffic stop is over at that point. And I don't think that's in dispute, and the court's findings do reflect that.
Does the video that I'm not sure whether it's been made a part of the record yet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Does it show all this?
Yeah, so the video would confirm this. It would make it clear that when the canine, there was a some communication about bringing the canine that did, was before going to speak with Mr. Shellabarger and the issuance of the ticket. But it's clear that the canine arrived, and their conversation, their kind of idle discussion about this ticket was interrupted by the canine arrival. And that's reflected both in, that's in the video. And the court, I believe, also found that their conversation was interrupted. And so that was just a conversation. And so at that point, there was no reason to detain, no basis to detain Mr. Shellabarger.
Well, it sounded like from the way that it was described, now we haven't heard this video or seen the video, but it sounded like the judge was saying that the traffic ticket was still in progress, quote unquote, because Shellabarger had questions. He's the one who kept asking questions about this ticket. Mm-hmm. And then they got interrupted because when the canine arrived, Shellabarger was the one who stopped the conversation to start asking about the canine. Is that reflected in the video, too?
Yes. And the problem with the court's reasoning, one, it's not supported by the court's other factual findings in which it does find the traffic ticket was issued. So, and the court seems to believe, and I think the state did, too, that it's like as if you get in just if you get in a canine call before, then we're good. And that's not what Rodriguez says. It is the prolonged detention that marks the illegality. So that is exactly what occurred here. And so we can't say that, just because you managed to get a call in before you physically handed the ticket, that doesn't make everything that happens pursuant to that okay. And so I think that's the fallacy that the court was operating under, and that's why the court made that finding.
You're out of time, but when you come back, one point I'd like you to address is what's your best authority and argument for the Altoids can being out of the scope of
sure.
the search?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hopefully my stuff doesn't stick. Good morning, Your Honor. Sarah B. on behalf of the state. Trying to make everything not stick. If I can address the factual portion of the record and how the stop occurred and the timing, because that's what
and
went over.
And to be clear, my concern is if his testimony is he knew he wasn't going to pursue the DUI. Well, the DUI covers alcohol or drug intoxication.
Correct.
And then after that, he makes a call for the drug dog. And after that, he starts doing a breath test that there was pointless if he's not pursuing that. And instead of doing the ticket, he is filling up the time until they get there. And he had no reasonable suspicion of possession of drugs to bring the drug dog in at that point.
And I understand your, Your Honor's concern. If you watch the video, I'm sorry, and there are actually three videos that are on there. It's the hour-long one, which you don't have to watch the entire hour, is the front camera for Trooper Farkas. But I also say you need to watch the camera, which is Trooper Clark, which is the second officer who comes on the scene. Because if you watch that at 10:17 a.m. is when the dog is actually called for. He calls Deputy Van Wyk, who is our canine unit in Lewis County, and Clark is the one who calls it. And while that is going on, is while Trooper Farkas is actually administering field sobriety tests up at the front of his vehicle. Now, that conversation that is going on later, where Trooper Farkas is back talking about getting taking a PBT after he finishes the field sobriety and comes back, and he tells Mr. Shellabarger that he's going to administer a portable breath test, and he walks back to his vehicle. you hear him having a conversation with Deputy Van Wyk. Now, I'm going to tell you all that when I heard it the first time, I actually thought he was on the phone or over the over his radio. But when I watched Deputy Clark's video, you will see that Deputy Van Wyk arrives on the scene at 10:25, which is before Deputy Trooper Schellerbarger, I mean Trooper, sorry, Farkas actually speaks to Deputy Van Wyk. So they're actually having a conversation on the scene with Deputy Van Wyk there about the dog. The dog and the canine unit arrive at 10:25. The sniff around the car starts about 10:32. If that makes sense as far as the...
And tell us, what was the time that you said Clark called for the canine unit?
10:17.
But the officer announces he's not going to pursue a DUI. At that point, what's the basis for having a dog search the vehicle?
Well, I think...
Only that he saw a Vuxa on the report? I mean, that's not evidence of a present offense.
But he still believed he was impaired. I mean, he didn't believe he was impaired enough to drive. He believed he had consumed. People can consume drugs without being impaired. I think we all can agree on that. So he didn't believe he was impaired enough to drive, but he believed that there was evidence of consumption. Those two things are distinct. I mean, you can consume a drug and not be impaired by one enough to drive. So,
and if someone has consumed drugs, that gives you PC to or reasonable suspicion for a canine sniff?
The state's position, if you look throughout, I think, the record and the way the state argued it and the factual findings and our briefing, I don't think we ever argued that there was an articulable suspicion to continue to expand the stop beyond what time it took to issue either the traffic infraction or the DUI, the investigation on the DUI.
Would you agree the sniff began after one of the deputies, whoever it was, said there's no DUI here?
I would, but he hadn't issued the traffic infraction. And when I think of issue the traffic infraction, it's just not at the point in time where he decides that he's going to issue the infraction. The infraction had to be printed. It had to be given to Mr. Schellerbarger in pursuant to the Washington State Patrol
But what
protocols.
Traffic infraction gave rise to a reasonable suspicion to search the vehicle? I don't care about the timeline. What's the basis for the search? There's no traffic infraction that gives you authority to search the vehicle in this case, is there? This is just a bare suspicion. He's in possession of drugs and using the time frame of not having printed the ticket to justify it, isn't it? They know he had a Vuxa.
Right.
They think he's impaired, his eyes are red, he's tired, he's sluggish. Gee, could be tired. Not enough to say that I can cite him for impaired driving DUI, but I'm going to keep him around because I think if we sniff here, we might find something.
And I understand your Honor's position, but I think that just
I'm trying to understand yours. I don't care. I mean...
I guess if I'm understanding your question, the dog sniff occurred while he was doing the traffic infraction.
Correct.
The court, however, found that the dog sniff continued once the traffic ticket had been delivered to the defendant. So at that point, why isn't that the point of has this been unreasonably prolonged question?
And okay, I didn't mean to interrupt. I apologize.
No, I think you get our question.
Okay. So, and I agree, according to Rodriguez, the critical question is whether conducting the dog sniff prolongs the stop. So, I guess to the state, then it comes to the untenable position is the trooper then supposed to, because they are in a conversation, and it is because Mr. Schellerbarger keeps, and if you watch the video, and that is really what you have to do is watch the video to see how the interaction goes between Mr. Schellerbarger and the trooper, because it starts at it takes about 5 minutes, 4.5 minutes for him to go through, you know, this is how you can mitigate, you can do all these things. I mean, it takes a long time because Mr. Schellerbarger keeps having questions. And at one point, it almost seems like he's done and the trooper's trying to disengage with him. And Mr. Schellerbarger asks, I think, I can actually mail in the fine. And after he'd already been explained to that once, and so the trooper again goes through, you can mail it in, here's your vehicle information, and is going through it again.
Yeah, but at that point, then he would have been free to leave.
He would have been.
So then you're no longer really in a traffic stop because he's just asking questions.
But I would say you still are in the traffic stop because he's still inquiring. You're still having questions. Mm-hmm. And it's the trooper's position. And he explains that, I think, in the when you read the verbatim report of proceedings, and I'm sorry, I don't have the exact cite to it, that is his requirement. He's required to go through everything.
But isn't your authority to actually do a dog sniff dependent on whether you are in a Terry detention or not? Because once the Terry detention's over and he's free to leave, what gives you the authority to continue a dog sniff?
And I would say that but, okay, I understand, yes, and but in this case, but, so in this case, it's based on the, I would agree, but in this case, it's the fact that Mr. Schellebarger keeps prolonging the fact that he's there.
But isn't the point that it has to occur within a legitimate Terry stop in the first place, and you have to have some reasonable suspicion? And my questions went to, even if it's in the time frame, why is there a reasonable suspicion to search the vehicle? And certainly, the conversation between Schellenbarger and the officer in this prolonged time frame didn't add anything new, didn't create a new suspicion to justify a search. At least I think the scope of Rodriguez is it extends through the stop because new information can be attained any time during that transaction. So I just want to be clear. I'm trying to raise a second point that even if the time frame works, I'm looking to point to the justification to search a vehicle unrelated to the traffic infraction.
By search, do you mean the sniff, or do you mean the what came after?
Yeah, to even do the sniff.
Okay.
And I don't think you need it to do the sniff, but.
And counsel, just so I want to make sure I heard you correctly. Are you conceding that at the point the ticket is issued, there's no reasonable suspicion of a crime?
I'm saying there is no reasonable suspicion of a DUI.
Or is there a reasonable suspicion of any crime at the point the ticket's issued?
I would concede that, yes.
Okay.
And I think it would be disingenuous of me not to, so based on the facts that were developed in this case.
Candor is always appreciated, counsel.
So if you have any other questions, I only have 10 seconds. So thank you.
Thank you.
Follow-up without, I'll get to your question in one second. Just to follow up, without reasonable suspicion, the search that was conducted can't be justified under the Fourth Amendment or Article 1, Section 7. So consent as a separate issue, if separate grounds for reversal, in this case, it's been the pressure from the officers that preceded, this, it occurred during this, what would be an illegal detention, which would also factor into this under Armenta, this, an illegal detention vitiates any consent given. That added to all of the other pressure given under the in obtaining this consent invalidates the basis for going into the truck, even if this court did not.
Let's assume there was proper consent. How did the search of the Altoids tin go beyond the scope of the consent?
Right. So consent is a jealously guarded exception to the warrant requirement, and we don't infer it. So any implied or it can be expressly or impliedly denied, and Mr. Schellebarger was told that. And by removing the bag from the car, and there was an observed Altoids tin, the officer talked about it in the console. Well, that ended up in the bag that Mr. Schellebarger removed from the car. That's an implied revocation of consent to search that tin.
Oh, you mean Schellebarger took the Altoids tin and put it in the McDonald's
bag? So
the
court's findings cross that out, the record, and it's so it's not found by the court, but it is reflected in the facts that we'd have to deduce from the video and from the testimony. So the officer had observed Altoids tins in the console. The Altoids tin, when Mr. Schellebarger went into the vehicle, the Altoids tin is now in this bag that the officer takes from Mr. Shellabarger. That is an implied or direct revocation of consent to search that item, which he had absolute authority to do. He could revoke his consent to search any item in that car, whether it be his coat. If he took that out, it would be the same.
So your position is Shellabarger took the Altoids tin from the console, put it in the McDonald's bag when he had been instructed by the police officer to remove the McDonald's bag from the truck.
Yes, and so it's removal of that tin. And to be candid with the court, that finding is crossed out by the court. However, that is reflected. It was that the officer, I don't believe, testified to that during the hearing, and that's why that was crossed out.
Oh, I see.
But there's no, from watching the video and from the observations prior to that, that's the only possible conclusion.
I thought there might have been two Altoids tins.
And there might have been, but the Altoids tin that was located, and the officer didn't testify that he saw him do it, so that's why I believe it was crossed out.
Right.
However, the inference is that they said Mr. Shellabarger was rummaging around, and so the inference would be that he removed that tin, put it in the bag in which the officer took it from him, didn't even say, I'll take that, it's your garbage, which is also subterfuge, which also invalidates any consent. So all of these factors, both from the beginning in which, consent was obtained, show that it was not voluntary, and that extends to the Altoids tin that he did remove from the car. I'd ask that you reverse this, the court's denial of motion to suppress. There was no reasonable suspicion when they detained him and conducted the search. Thank you.
Thank you both.
Thank you.